There's a very important principle revealed to us in the Bible in Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. This is a matter that I believe we need to think about on a regular basis. We need to study. We need to be reminded of it. Here the Apostle Paul wrote, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." That's a wonderful statement. It doesn't say that all things that happen to God's people are good. I don't know who came up with that idea that God's people will never have a heartache or any type of hardship or difficulty. The Bible doesn't teach that. Matter of fact, this same chapter teaches us that we suffer because the whole creation suffers. But one day that suffering will come to an end. And verse 18 says that I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed in us. That's another marvelous statement. But we need to be reminded, I believe, on a regular basis that all things work together for the ultimate good of a certain group of people, those who love God, those who are the called according to his purpose. That must be a very important principle because it's illustrated many, many times in the Bible. I believe this is something that God wants us to be aware of. It has reference to his providential working on behalf of his people. But I love to study the Old Testament especially because it contains many illustrations of the principle that's revealed in Romans 8 and verse 28. We just completed a study of the book of Esther. That's a classic illustration of God working all things together for the good of his people. It appeared for a while that all the Jews were going to be destroyed. Well, God wasn't going to let that happen, and he didn't. And at the very end of the book, you see God's people blessed abundantly. Well, this evening, we want to look at the lives of three young men. And as we do so, we want to see this principle illustrated once again. I'm talking about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I wish I knew how many times over the years I have told the story and read the story in the Bible about those young men. And it thrills my soul every time I read it and talk about it and study it. It's a marvelous Bible story, and these things actually occurred, and we can be encouraged by them. Well, let's first look at the Bible and let it explain to us why these young men were in Babylon. Now, they're Jewish young men, but we find them in Babylon. Now, when you study the Old Testament especially, it helps to know a little bit about Bible history. Remember, at one time, Israel was a united kingdom under the leadership of Saul, David, and Solomon. After Solomon passed away, his son Rehoboam became king, and under his leadership, Israel was divided into two kingdoms. The northern kingdom, it's usually referred to as Israel. And then there was the southern kingdom. Most of the times, it's referred to as Judah. But there were two kingdoms. Each kingdom had its own series of kings. Concerning the northern kingdom, all the kings were bad. Now, some were worse than others, but there wasn't one real good one out of the bunch. Now, the southern kingdom did have several good kings. Two that come to mind would be Hezekiah and Josiah. They were excellent kings. They were very instrumental in trying to bring God's people back to him. But the northern kingdom was taken into captivity by the people known as the Assyrians in 722 BC. That northern kingdom never rose to power again. God allowed the southern kingdom to exist a while longer. You see, it would be through Judah that the Lord would eventually come. So you could see God's providence at work through all of this. But the people in the southern kingdom sinned against the Lord, and he punished them. He sent Isaiah the prophet to try to call the people back. They wouldn't listen to him. He also sent Jeremiah. Isaiah said that there would be a period of captivity. People didn't listen. Jeremiah said the captivity is very near. Now he said how long it would last. He said it would last for 70 years. The people did not listen to Jeremiah either. Well, God allowed the Babylonians to take the Jews in the southern kingdom into captivity. That actually began in 606 BC. Now, that was not when the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem. They just took control of it. They came back in 597 BC. Then they came back again in 586 BC. And when they did, they leveled the temple, the entire city of Jerusalem. It was completely destroyed. Well, we need to keep in mind that when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were on the scene, we find them in Babylon. They were taken into captivity. Well, let's look at Daniel chapter 1 and get the details of why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were in Babylon. In Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, the king of Babylon at this time was a man known as Nebuchadnezzar. He took control of Jerusalem. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Now he just encircled it, camped all the way around it. That was a common tactic they used that was used back in that day and time of conquering a city. When an enemy surrounded a city, well, the city normally had very high, thick walls for protection. But eventually supplies would run out. And the condition of the people would become desperate. Sometimes they'd even try to break loose and get out. Well, that usually didn't fare too well. But that was a common tactic that was used back in that day and time. An enemy would besiege a city, that is, encircle it, and just wait. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. When Nebuchadnezzar took control of Jerusalem, this is not the occasion when he destroyed the city, but notice that he did take some of the vessels from the temple and carried them back to his homeland and put them in the temple of his God. Well, that gives us an idea of what kind of man Nebuchadnezzar was. He was a powerful ruler. He had a great army, but he was given to the worship of idols. So Nebuchadnezzar took control of Jerusalem. Now let's read about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as well as Daniel, and verses 3 through 7. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. When Nebuchadnezzar took control of Jerusalem, he gave a command that certain of the Jewish young men, that is, those who were well-to-do, those who were affiliated with the king and so forth, they would be taken, and they would be trained for a period of 3 years. They would learn the Babylonian language. They would learn the customs of the Babylonians. At the end of that three-year period, these Jewish young men would be used to rule their own people. Now, say what you want to. I believe Nebuchadnezzar was a shrewd leader. You see, the Jews did not take too kindly to foreigners ruling them. But if a Jew was in control, more than likely they'd react better to him. So Nebuchadnezzar was training certain Jewish young men to serve as the rulers of their own people. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were three of the young men chosen to be trained in the service of the Babylonians. Well, let's go down to verse 17. And let's notice that these young men went through that period of training, and then let's consider what happened to them. Verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Notice especially that after going through this 3-year period of training, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as well as Daniel, stood before the king. Now, I want you to notice that God blessed these young men abundantly. They were much better when it came to matters of science and wisdom and so forth than all the others. Now let's think about the situation that existed. These young men were taken from their homeland. They were taken to Babylon. You know, that would have been a great trial. Did they deserve that kind of treatment? Well, no. But God was going to use them to be a blessing to the rest of his people. Well, let's go to the end of chapter 2. Chapter 2 is a very interesting chapter because in it we find that Daniel interpreted the king's dream about 4 great kingdoms. Well, let's notice the last 2 verses of chapter 2, verses 48 and 49. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. What I especially want you to notice from those 2 verses is that Daniel made a request of the king that his 3 friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, be given this very important position. And they were placed over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Now that's pretty high up. Those are very important positions of responsibility. I think you can see God's providence at work already. Well, we want to turn our attention now to chapter 3. This is the chapter I really want us to concentrate on, because it shows how God worked all things together for the good of his people. Now, right now, we're looking at some illustrations in the Bible of what we read in Romans 8 and verse 28. This is a great example. Now, you need to keep in mind that in chapter 2, the king Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And his dream was about this very large image. And the body of that image was divided into four sections. The first section, the head, was made of gold. Now it's interesting that the king had this dream, but the next day he couldn't remember it. He knew he had a dream, so he called in his wise men and said, "Tell me the dream that I had." I said, "No man's able to do that. You tell us the dream and we'll be glad to interpret it for you." Well, he said, "No, you tell me the dream, then I will believe your interpretation." Well, they went back and forth several times, and finally the king became very angry. Daniel learned about it, and he was given an opportunity to reveal Nebuchadnezzar's dream to him and to interpret it. But the head of gold of this image represented the Babylonian kingdom. Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar, "You are the head of gold," referring to his kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar was a proud man, quite vain. I can't help but he thought in his mind, "I'm not going to be content with this image with just a head of gold. I'm going to make an entire image of gold." So that's what he did. I believe he thought his kingdom was going to last forever. It didn't. And that dream showed that the case. Well, he made this image of gold. The height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, I can't tell you exactly in feet and inches the exact size of this image. Suffice it to say, it was big. And I remember studying this in school many years ago when the Bible says it was an image of gold. I doubt very seriously that the whole thing was solid gold, because that would have been very large. More than likely, it was gold plated. And you know, sometimes today we have things that are gold-plated and we say that they're of gold. So there's no contradiction here. More than likely, this great big image that Nebuchadnezzar had built was covered with gold. But remember, the dream had to do with the head of gold. He wasn't content with that. He made an entire image of gold. Well, that image was dedicated, and when it was dedicated, the king gave a command for everybody to worship it when the music played. Let's continue at verse 2. "Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors, and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, 'To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Therefore at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. So the king gave a command that when this music was played, everybody was to bow down and worship before this image. And if someone refused to do so, there was a very stiff penalty in store. Verse 6 says that those who would not obey were to be cast into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. Well, that put the Jews in a sort of a difficult position. The king said, worship the image. The creator of the universe said, don't worship any image. Let's look at Exodus chapter 20 for just a moment. And notice what God had included in the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20, let's start at verse 3. Now, this is the law that the Jews were under. This is the law that God gave through Moses. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So God made it clear in his law that his people were not allowed to worship images. And here in Babylon, the great king Nebuchadnezzar has made a law which says that when the music is played, everyone is to bow down and worship this image. Well, the Jews had a decision to make. Would they obey the king or would they obey God? You know, in the New Testament, the apostles faced a very similar situation. I believe it was the apostle Peter who said, we ought to obey God rather than men. And I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet. But I'm very concerned that in the maybe not too distant future, we might be facing similar situations. Will we obey the law of the land or will we obey God? Now, the Bible teaches us to obey the laws of the land. That's very clearly taught in Romans 13 as well as other scriptures. However, if a law of the land contradicts a law of God, we've got to submit to God. Well, that's the situation that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were facing. The king said, worship the image. God said, don't worship any image. Well, apparently their minds were made up because they did not worship the image. Someone reported that to the king. Verse 8. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now let's think about this for just a moment. Did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego go on a great campaign and make a big issue of not falling down before this image? No, because the king did not know anything about it. But you can always rest assured there's going to be some kind of a troublemaker looking for something to use against God's people. There were some who observed that these young men were not bowing before the image. They reported that to the king. You know, I haven't heard this expression in a long time. When I was a kid, we used to talk about people being tattletales. That's what we have here. There were some people who reported to the king that there were certain Jews who did not obey his command to worship the image. Now, in my judgment, for what it's worth, Nebuchadnezzar should have talked to these young men and asked, is there a reason why you're not worshiping my image? Well, that wasn't Nebuchadnezzar's style. Look at verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, see, he was very angry, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not you serve my gods nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." And I can almost hear the sarcasm in Nebuchadnezzar's voice when he went on to say, "And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" I try to picture this image, and I can see this great king. I don't know if he was a large man or not, but I assume he's dressed in his royal garments, seated on his great throne, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are young men. I assume that they were of fairly average stature. And I can just see this great big king peering down at them, trying to intimidate them, making a sarcastic statement like that. "Who is that God that will deliver you out of my hands?" To his credit, he gave them an opportunity, another opportunity to do what he wanted them to do. Well, that just presented a great opportunity for Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego to submit to God's will. Verse 16 says, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter.'" Now, the Bible uses that word careful in a sense that maybe we're not used to. In other words, these young men are saying, "We're not filled with anxiety over how we're going to answer you. We're not filled with care over this. We're not worried about it. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Now, that's quite a statement. They told the king to his face, "Our God is able to deliver us, and he will deliver us. But if not," that is, if God decides not to deliver us, "we're still not going to worship your image." Now, frankly, that took a lot of courage. They weren't intimidated. They were not filled with care. Their minds were made up that they were going to serve God. They were confident that God would work all things together for their ultimate good, even if they lost their lives. You think they believed the principle that Paul presented in Romans 8:28? Well, I believe so. Let's continue at verse 19, because Nebuchadnezzar had them cast into the furnace. Verse 19. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. Just last night I saw a few minutes of a program, Dirty Jobs, with Mike Rowe. Maybe you've seen him. He went to a place where they were making marbles. And they poured the materials into a furnace. And let me tell you, that furnace was hot. It was so hot that they couldn't get near it. One fella burned a hole in his glove just being close to it. Well, I don't know what kind of furnace this was, but Nebuchadnezzar had it heated up 7 times hotter than normal. He wanted to make sure that these young men, when they were cast into it, were going to be consumed. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Now, why do you suppose they were thrown in fully clothed? They wanted to make sure that these fellows were burned up. They were completely clothed. Hats, coats, completely clothed. Verse 22. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Well, remember what the penalty was for disobeying the king's commandment. He gave them another opportunity to worship the image, but they refused to do it. He had them cast into the furnace. It was heated up 7 times hotter than usual. Well, let's notice how God worked all things together for the good of his people. Verse 24. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste, and spake, and said unto his counselors, Did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. He answered and said, Lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire, and the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Now that's complete deliverance. Their garments were not burned. Not one hair was even singed. Their coats were not burned, and the smell of the fire did not get on them. That's amazing to me. I think I've used this illustration before. Sometimes when I go out at night to walk my little dog, I can smell some smoke. and I know where it's coming from. If the wind is blowing in the, I start to say right direction, I guess the wrong direction, it's coming from about 200 feet away. We have a neighbor who likes to sit out on the front porch and smoke. And invariably that smoke will come right in my direction when I go outside. It's about 200 feet away, maybe a little bit further. And you know, I can be around that for just a few minutes and go inside, and Teresa can smell it. And then I usually don't feel real comfortable until I take a shower and change clothes. These men were thrown into this furnace, and the smell of the smoke did not even get on them. That's complete deliverance, isn't it? Now put yourself in the position of the king. He thinks he has all this power and authority, and these young men defied him. He had them thrown into the furnace. They've been completely delivered. Now, he can't deny it because he's standing there seeing it. Let's look at verses 28 and 29, because the king gave a new law, a new decree. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver out of this sort." That's the same man who earlier said, "Who is that God that will deliver you out of might?" Well, he knows now that Jehovah is the one true God, and he delivered his servants. Well, let's notice that not only were the lives of these young men spared, but then they were promoted even higher. Verse 30, "Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon." Now, in my judgment, that supplies us with a great example of God working all things together for the good of his people. Not only did he bless these three young men, but in doing so, he blessed all of his people who were in captivity. You see, eventually that captivity would come to an end. The Jews would be allowed to go back to their homeland, and they would rebuild the temple. Eventually, Jesus would come from that very tribe of Judah. This is a great example of God working all things together for good on behalf of his faithful servants.